We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
The town I live in is small and quiet. The kind of place where you know nearly everyone's name and the sound of their voice. And here, where life moves slowly and everyone's path seems almost preordained, we have one custom that's unlike any other. A certainty that's part of our lives from the very beginning. From birth, each of us is given a date, printed on a small certificate and signed by the town's doctor. It's the date we're expected to die. Most of us accept it without question and treat it almost like a birthday or a local holiday. Just a fact of life here in a town that values tradition and stability. That's how it's always been. You're born, you live, and you prepare for that final day when it comes. Some people throw big last day parties or take farewell road trips. Others, like me, keep things simple. The older you get, the more you find comfort in the routine and the little things. I'm Ethan, 45 years old, and my own death date is tomorrow. It's strange, perhaps, but I find myself calm about it. At peace, even. I've had a good life here, a good job at the library, a small but loyal circle of friends, and a family who loves me. I've always known this day would come, and there's an odd kind of relief in knowing it's finally here. There's nothing left I feel I need to do. So tonight, the night before my death, I'm going through the motions with a quiet sort of dignity. I spent time with my family, not wanting to make a fuss. I shared a simple dinner, passed around old family albums, and laughed over the usual stories. We toasted to a life well lived, though I could see the glint of sadness in my sister's eyes. I reassured her with a small smile and a touch on the shoulder. This is just how things are here. We don't dwell on things. We don't overthink them. As the evening deepens, I find myself sitting alone in my room, boxing up sentimental odds and ends that had gone untouched for years. An old watch from my father, a few journals from my 20s, a dried bouquet from my high school dance. Each one is a part of a life that, in a way, feels complete now. There's no sense of dread. Just the sense of the inevitability of a chapter drawing to a close as neatly as it began. Outside, the town is settling down, the usual quiet settling in as people close up shop, dim their lights, and ready themselves for bed. I close my eyes and take a deep breath, a final moment of reflection on everything and nothing in particular. In this town tomorrow, I think, will just be another day. I wake up with a start, surprised to feel the morning light spilling across the bed. There's a moment of disorientation as I lie there, still drowsy, half expecting something else, an afterlife maybe, or even a simple void. Instead, I feel the solid weight of the mattress, the crisp sheets beneath my fingers, and the smell of coffee drifting faintly from the kitchen. It's familiar, grounding, and yet unexpected. I'm still here. I sit up slowly, heart pounding as I look at the clock. 6:32 a.m. Then my phone just to confirm. The date, my death date, printed on my certificate since I was a child, has come and gone. But I'm still here, breathing, blinking in daylight. A wave of joy hits me, unbidden, like an electric surge. I'm alive. Somehow, I've outlived the date that was supposed to end my life. It feels miraculous, surreal, a second chance. After pacing around in shock, I reach for my phone and dial my sister. I hesitate, thumb hovering over a name, unsure how to explain something I barely understand. But I finally press call, my voice thick with a mix of excitement and disbelief as I tell her the news. At first, there was silence on the other end. I hear a gasp, then a shaky laugh. She's thrilled, but her voice has a hesitant edge, a hint of something I can't place. "But Ethan, how?" she whispers, as if she's afraid to ask. I don't have an answer. I laugh, assuring her I don't plan on looking a gift horse in the mouth. "Maybe it was just a mistake," I say, though I can hear the doubt in my own voice. My closest friends are equally baffled when I call them. Their responses a strange mix of joy and unease. There's a disconnect in their laughter, a sense of uncertainty. It's though I've broken a rule we've all lived by that has never been questioned. I can't quite shake the feeling that their joy isn't as genuine as I'd hoped. That afternoon, still riding the wave of my own survival, I decided to step outside, eager to reconnect with the world. But as I walk through my yard, something peculiar happens. I reach out to steady myself on a nearby tree trunk, and the bark beneath my palm seems to lose its color, fading to a dull, lifeless gray. I pull my hand back, shaking off the odd sensation, telling myself it's just a dead spot on the tree. Later, I pick up my old watch, the one my father gave me, the one I'd packed away as a keepsake. The gold plating has somehow lost its shine, dulled and tarnished in a way it never was before. It strikes me as strange, but I laugh it off, attributing it to its age. Still, as I sit down to dinner, I can't ignore a nagging feeling that something's off. The food seems to taste a little bland, as if missing something. Objects around me seem to have lost their usual warmth, the color around me feeling subtly muted. But I brush it off, telling myself it's just part of the adjustment. After all, I'm alive. This second chance, whatever it is a gift, a miracle. After the initial shock of survival wears off, life takes on a new, vivid sharpness. I can feel the warmth of every sunrise like it's painting my skin, scenes I took for granted before taking on a new meaning of hope. Each morning, I wake up with a renewed energy, savoring everything I'd once taken for granted. I thought my time was up, and suddenly it wasn't. So I dive in, determined to make the most of this uncharted time I've been given. There are small things, walking the trails just outside of town, which I'd neglected over the years, and trying out recipes with an enthusiasm I never had before, experimenting with spices just because I can. And there are bigger things, I reach out to old friends I'd lost touch with, join a few local clubs, and catch up on every little dream that seemed out of reach. For once, I feel like a man let out of a cage. People around town notice too, commenting on how I seem brighter, happier, and I am. But the brightness fades. Occasionally, I begin feeling drained, nagging exhaustion creeping in no matter how much I sleep. I'll be mid-conversation with a friend and feel like my thoughts are molasses, as if I had to push my words out against a strong wind. My surroundings grow dim, colours appear just a shade darker, and the air is subtly colder. It's subtle, like a shadow creeping just out of sight. One evening, I head to my sister's house for dinner, excited to catch up. She set the table with flowers, all brightly coloured and fresh, something she never does. But an hour into the meal, her face looks pale, a little drawn, and she keeps rubbing her temples, saying she feels unusually tired. The flowers seem to wilt during our meal, petals curling at the edges. She excuses herself early, and I leave feeling unsettled. The next time I visit, she opens the door slowly, greeting me with a hesitant smile that doesn't reach her eyes. She's more distant, her conversation guarded. By the time I leave, I feel a chill in my bones, like I walked out of a freezer. The odd occurrences continue. Electronics around me short out, flickering, then dying in my hands. My old television set gives out with a loud pop one night, the screen going black. Then my microwave, the radio, even my alarm clock, all fail one after the other. At first, I thought it was just bad luck, but when it happened to my phone, I couldn't ignore it anymore. People, too, started drifting away. Friends who were eager to spend time together grow quiet, cancelling plans or cutting conversations short. They tell me they feel off or uncomfortable, fidgeting as if they can't bear to stay near me. Even brief interactions leave them looking tired, distracted, and eager to leave. My sister stops inviting me over entirely, and when I call, her voice is distant, her words clipped. One day, I ran into an old friend, Joe, at the grocery store. We chat for a few minutes, laughing over an old story. But by the end, he looks exhausted. There's a pallor to his face, a sagging to his shoulders. He stammers something about needing to get going, and I watch him leave with a hollow feeling in my stomach. Back home, things get stranger still. Food in my fridge spoils within days, and fruit and vegetables turn soft and foul-smelling, even though they are well within their expiry date. I cook a meal, only to find it tasteless, no matter how well I prepare it. Even the water from my tap tastes stale and flat. Sitting in my silent living room one evening, I feel a profound sense of isolation, a silence pressing in like a weight. The plants droop in their pots, the light flickers overhead, and a gnawing dread settles deep in my stomach. I'm still alive, yes, but something is deeply, unnervingly wrong. As the days drag on, I start avoiding people, embarrassed and afraid of the effect I seem to have on them. My so-called second chance is becoming a curse, pushing everything and everyone away from me. The weight of what's happening settles over me slowly. I've gone over every possible explanation. Stress, coincidence, my own paranoia. Still, I can't ignore what's right before me anymore. The flowers, my food, my friends. They're all affected. Everything I come into contact with fades or dies, drained of its vitality. One morning, as I stare at my reflection in the bathroom mirror, I notice something unsettling in my own eyes. A shadow. An emptiness. I look older, more haggard, and my skin is paler. For a moment, I feel like a stranger is staring back at me. Someone unnatural, a distortion of the man I used to be. I'm surviving, yes, but at a cost I didn't choose and don't want to accept. Desperate for clarity, I reach out to my closest friend, Tom. He's been there through it all, steady and reliable, a grounding force I need now more than ever. When we meet, I can tell he's hesitant, his usual ease replaced by an uncomfortable tension. Over coffee, I finally admit what's been happening, each word feeling heavier than the last. Tom, I say, voice tight, have you noticed anything strange since I was supposed to... The words trail off, and I watch his face carefully. To my relief, he doesn't brush me off. Instead, he takes a deep breath, looking almost relieved to be asked. Honestly, Ethan, I have, he says, pausing as if weighing his words. It's hard to explain, but I just feel different after seeing you. Things don't feel right. It's like something's off, like you're off, almost like you're out of sync with the rest of us. The words hit like a punch to the gut, and I can barely meet his gaze, but I couldn't help but appreciate his honesty. So, you're saying... I start, but he nods before I can finish. Yeah, Ethan, I don't know how to say this, but it's almost like you're not supposed to be here. The silence between us is suffocating. I feel exposed, like I've been laid bare. The last shred of denial crumbles, and I realize that somehow, surviving my death date has made me something unnatural. I'm living on borrowed time, but I didn't realize where I was borrowing it from. Tom doesn't say much more, but our discomfort grows palpable. He avoids my eyes, fidgeting with his hands, and finally he stands, mumbling something about needing to leave. His face is filled with a mixture of pity and fear, like he's afraid I might have taken more from him just by sitting here. He doesn't look back when he leaves, and I know deep down that I've lost him, my oldest, closest friend. As he walks away, I feel a hollowness settle in, gnawing and cold. I don't just feel like an outcast. I am one. Back at home, the isolation sets in. I've been given this second chance, but seemingly at the cost of everyone and everything around me. My presence has become toxic. Plants wither. My home feels more like a crypt than a sanctuary. And the silence presses in on me, heavier than ever. Days pass, each one lonelier than the last. I avoid everyone, neighbors, friends, family, out of fear of what my presence might do to them. I don't even open my windows, terrified of birds or stray animals, anything living that might come close enough to feel the drain. My house becomes a self-imposed prison, a quiet place where I exist in solitude, haunted by the life I'm unintentionally living. What was once a miraculous second chance has become a slow, consuming curse. I'd once looked forward to each day, grateful for the unexpected time I'd been given. Now, I dread every moment, every step, every breath, wondering how much I'll take from the world around me just by being here. The days blur together, every hour more suffocating than the last. I pace the length of my small house, fighting against the weight pressing in on me. I try to rationalize it. Maybe it's a psychological trick, a dark corner of my mind manifesting this nightmare to punish me. But I know it's real each time I pass a mirror, catch the drawn hollows under my eyes, or feel the oppressive quiet hanging heavy around me. My presence is a poison, a drain on the life around me. I can't stay. I can't keep letting this curse bleed into the people I once loved. In a flash of desperation, I decide to leave town and go as far away as possible. Maybe distance will break whatever connection has turned me into this thing. I throw clothes into a bag, grab my keys, and shove open the door, practically running to my car. But the escape doesn't come easy. The car sputters to a stop barely 2 miles down the road, the engine wheezing and coughing before it dies completely. I sit there, slumped over the wheel, fighting the urge to scream. I call for a tow, waiting under the heavy sun as it drains the little energy I have. But the driver who arrives seems put off. He barely looks at me as he fixes the car, muttering something about my bad luck. I brush it off, impatient, desperate. The repairs hold just long enough for me to reach the edge of town. I feel a moment of relief as I see the highway stretch before me, endless, a way out of this nightmare. But as soon as I try pull onto the road, the car shudders, lurches, and dies once again. It won't start back up. Defeated, I lock up and start walking, determined to leave on foot if necessary. Hitchhiking, however, proves impossible. Car after car whizzes, drivers looking at me with a strange mix of pity and unease, their eyes darting away when I catch their gaze. A bus pulls up at a stop near the edge of town, but the driver waves me off, barely glancing at me, muttering something about not wanting trouble. It's like everyone knows somehow that I don't belong. Hours pass, and the hopelessness grows, gnawing at me like a festering wound. By evening, I'm back where I started, exhausted at the edge of town, every attempt blocked by either mechanical failure or the strange, unspoken refusal of others to help. It's like an invisible force is binding me here. Not with magic, but with sick twists of fate. I stumble back to my house, shoulders slumped, every step feeling like a weight pulling me deeper into the earth. Inside, the silence greets me, heavy, hollow, and suffocating. It's clearer than ever now. There is no leaving. I've exhausted every option, clinging to hope like a man drowning. But hope has abandoned me, leaving only questions. Questions I'm done living with. So, I go to the only person who might understand the impossible. The town's oracle is a quiet, reserved woman in her 70s, rumored to know secrets no one else dares speak of. She's lived here as long as anyone can remember. Her presence, a fixture, as familiar as the buildings themselves. People say she can see the threads of life and death, that she knows things about each of us that we could never know ourselves. The air feels thick as I approach her home, the last place I can go for any sort of clarity. She answers the door before I even knock, as if she's expecting me, and gestures for me to follow her inside. Her home is dim, filled with the smell of old books and faint incense. There's a stillness here, something that feels eternal, as though time has no place in her world. "Please," I say, my voice cracking, "you have to help me. I need to understand. Why did I survive? Why am I like this? My desperation spills out in words that tumble over each other, jagged with raw need. The Oracle regards me with a quiet, unreadable expression. She listens patiently, her eyes filled with a kind of ancient sadness, as though she'd heard every version of this plea before. After a long silence, she speaks, her voice low and steady, almost like she's speaking to herself. Death dates are a part of a balance here, Ethan. Each date holds a purpose, a thread in the fabric of life that keeps this town steady. To survive beyond that, it's to unravel that balance. By living past your time, you're pulling from the world around you, feeding on the life that's meant for others. You're not meant to be here. Her words are like a slow, cold current washing over me. So, I am draining them, I whisper, barely able to keep my voice steady. She nods, her expression unwavering. Yes, every moment you remain, others in this town feel it. They lose pieces of themselves, pieces that go to sustain you. That is the price of escaping death. To live, you borrow. You've been borrowing from those around you, their vitality slowly siphoning into you. A sick realization settles in, chilling me to the bone. I felt the fading light in my friend's eyes, the way they've grown wary, distant. I was right to feel like a parasite, and this confirmation is a weight that threatens to crush me. I lower my head, unable to meet her gaze. Is there any way to stop it? I manage, the words barely more than a whisper. The Oracle studies me carefully, then nods. There is one way, but it requires surrender. The only way to end this, Ethan, is to restore what was taken, to give back the life you borrowed. You must accept your death as it was meant to be, willingly, to let the balance correct itself. The finality in her voice sinks deep. I fought so hard to stay alive, clinging to each second, each breath. And now I'm being asked to let it go. I feel a strange calm settling in, resignation mingling with a heavy sorrow that tugs at my chest. I nod, swallowing the lump in my throat. I understand. She places a gentle hand on my shoulder, her touch warm and grounding, and hands me a vial of liquid. She didn't have to tell me what it was. Take the time you need to say goodbye, Ethan. Then, when you're ready, return to where you should have left. I leave her house feeling lighter, yet burdened by a sadness that words can't touch. This isn't just an ending. Now, it's a choice, a sacrifice that holds more weight than anything I've ever known. That night, I sat alone in my home, pen and paper in hand. I write letters to those I've loved, the friends I've lost. I don't try to explain everything. How could I? Instead, I apologize and offer gratitude and love, hoping they'll somehow understand the heart behind them. I write one to my sister, telling her I'm sorry for everything I took from her, for the shadow I brought into her life. Each letter is a small act of surrender, a step toward letting go. When I finish, I seal the envelopes and leave them on the table. My last quiet gift to the life I'm finally ready to release. I close my eyes, the silence around me feeling less like a poison and more like peace. I'm ready to restore the balance, to return what I've borrowed, and to embrace the end as it was meant to be. I stand at the threshold of my home, gazing over the town one last time. I break open the vial and gulp its contents. There's a quietness now, a stillness in my mind that I haven't felt since this whole nightmare began. As I step forward, the familiar streets seem to blur, fading into the first light of dawn. Each step draws something out of me, a gentle and final release. I feel the weight lift, like the burden I've carried is finally letting go, piece by piece. The air grows lighter, as if the town is exhaling, filling with the life I've held captive in my skin. I keep walking, the drain growing deeper as I leave the last bounds of the town. I barely feel the ground beneath my feet, the final energy fragments slipping from me as I cross into open fields. My pulse slows, steady and calm, each beat softer than the last. Around me, the world settles back into what it once was. The trees stand a little taller, the light grows a little brighter, and the quiet murmur of the town's waking hours stirs to life behind me. The sense of pressure I once drained from the others feels restored and whole, as if my departure was what the town needed all along. I glance back, catching the faint outlines of familiar places, and I feel a wave of peace, knowing I'm leaving things as they were meant to be. Faces flash in my mind. My sister's laughter, Tom's quiet smile, the warmth of friends I held dear. They're safe now, free from the pull of my unintended curse. As my breath fades, I know I'm no longer part of this world, but rather a quiet echo, something gentle in the background. I linger only as a whisper, a brief warmth felt by those I loved most, no more than a faint memory, a reminder that I was once here. And in this quiet surrender, I finally find peace, restored to the balance of things as they were always meant to be.
My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com